Accession number 27796, Mr. Harry Irons, Reel 2. Now, we're talking about when you went on the air gunner, on the course at Blackburn. Which unit were you joining there? What exactly was this called?
There wasn't a unit. It was just about 2,000 men going on what they call a wireless operating course, Morse code course, learning Morse code. We were stationed in private billets. All the boarding houses there had to take in so many airmen to live in them. And
now, what were the billets like?
Well, it was ordinary boarding houses. About two or three of us in the room. It was just ordinary houses, but they used before the war for holidays, you know.
And how did the landlady would still be there? Would she?
Oh, she's there. All the family was there. Yeah, the whole family. Yeah.
And how did they treat you?
Oh, well, quite well. Yeah. We didn't get a lot to eat, but I don't suppose they got a lot of money to keep us either.
And tell me about your training at Blackpool. You were doing a wireless operator.
Morse code.
Now, how did they start teaching you Morse code?
Well, what they do, there's a huge Woolworths in Blackpool, and they had a big room above Woolworths, and there's about 400 or 500 of us used to have a table on long tables, and at the end of the long table was a civilian instructor, and his job was to teach us Morse code, starting from two or three words a minute and gradually working it up to 12 words a minute, and that took around about 4 or 5 months. So we reached the stage of 12 words a minute, and then you passed out from there.
Now, how did you find it? How did you take to it?
Not all that. It was a big group of us there, and after a while, a lot of us got fed up with it, you know. So,
were you just bored with it?
Was bored with it, yeah. That's what it was, yeah. And the discipline was, there was a lot of discipline up there, but obviously, because we was all in civilian billets, so therefore they had to keep more control on the airmen that were there. Obviously, you weren't allowed out too late of a night time. The streets were cleared by about 9 o'clock. No airman was allowed to be about after that. But the discipline itself was tough, you know. Everywhere we went, we had to march. And we stayed there. And actually speaking, there were so many of us doing this wireless course, they had too many. That was the problem. So what they was doing, they was asking us if we would re-enlist as straight air gunners. That means that instead of wireless operating, we'd become air gunners.
Now, what did you have any opinion about that?
Not really, no. You must remember, I was very young. I was still only just turned 17. I was only 17 then. So a lot of it used to go over your head.
Had you any idea how dangerous it was being there, gunner, at the time?
No, not really. I soon found out, though. No, not really. No.
So you decided to re-enlist?
Yeah, so we enlisted as straight air gunners.
Was there any sort of procedure, or did they just automatically accept?
Just because we'd already passed the educational thing for these sort of thing, and physically we were perfect, you know. So what they'd done, they put us in a pool. The straight air gunners.
So when did you leave Blackpool then? What month was that?
I must have left Blackpool. What was that? That was 1941.
Yeah, August 41, I think you went there.
Yeah. Must have left there around about Christmas 41.
Now, where did you go to as a trainee air gunner?
Well, what they done, they said you've got to wait for a pool. And we'll call on you. Because we didn't know, I'll tell you this now, we didn't know that all these 4-engine bombers were going to be produced and they had no gunners for them. And that was the idea of the building up reserve. From there I went to a place up in Yorkshire, an airfield. They had Spitfires there. I was on ground crew there. I'm trying to think of the name of the air drone. It'll come to me in a minute. And I was there for about around about March 42 as a general
about three body. Months
yeah just an ordinary dog's body there doing general duties.
So what about where did you go in March?
From March they posted us down to Regent's Park. There's air crew selection board there. We done a few little educational exams. We was there for about a week.
And what sort of exams you do? This is Regent's Park in London.
Yeah, Regent's Park. Yeah, it was at Lord. Actually, we used to go in Lord's Cricket Ground.
So it's St John's Wood.
That's right. That's where we used to do all our square.
That's the aircrew reception centre.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And what were they doing there? They were
just selecting out what the aircrew, what their trades were. And while we was there, there was about 300 of us on parade. And most of us, there was people trained to be air gunners, people trained to be bomb aimers, people trained to be wireless operators. So we was in this queue, and the sergeant, the warrant officer came up, and he just sliced the queue in half. He said, "You lot are going somewhere else, and you're going up to Bridlington." Well, I was one that went to Bridlington. But those that they cut off, they sent over to Canada to do their training. And they said, but the thing was, at the time, whatever trade you was, an air crew, then pilot, anything, they said, "You're all air gunners now." They just said, "You've all been re-enlisted, you're all straight air gunners now." And that was it. There was no arguments. And they sent us up to a place called Bridlington.
And what was that? Was it? Did it have a name? There was a unit?
It was a selection place for air gunners. We got kitted out there with all our flying gear.
Now what flying gear were you given?
Flying boots, goggles, helmet, and the green flying zip-up thing. I forget what they call it now.
Sidcot?
Sidcot, yeah. That's right. We all issued with Sidcot and flying boots, flying gloves, and that was it. Goggles.
And then what happened? What else were you doing at the... I mean, did you start your training at Bridlington?
No. It was just there, more or less, to select us to which air gunnery school we was going to. And then from there, I went to number one air gunnery school, Manby, in Lincolnshire. And that's when it all starts.
And is that where does your logbook start there, or...?
That's where my logbook starts, yeah.
And that's Manby...
Manby, yeah. M-A-N-B-Y, Manby.
And that's... What month was that? What was it?
Well, you can look in there, yeah. It's in there. Right at the beginning.
Looks like July. Yep, July. Yeah. Now... So, how do they first start? How do they first start training?
When you go to there, this place... And I tell you, it was there. It was very, very strict there as well. Even though they done a lot of flying there. It was all students there, you know, learning to fly, bomb aimers and gunners. Well, when we got there, they had proper classrooms. There was about 12 of us in the classroom, and we had a sergeant air gunner teaching us the rudiments of the Browning gun. We had to strip them down. And do them up and know exactly how they fire, what round of man around they fired, and deflection, and what the bullet drop was on when you fired a bullet, your machine gun, because it used to drop in the air, and we had to learn all that. And then after about 2 weeks, they said we're going to start flying, and that's when we started.
And that's, Wellington. Your first flight looks like the 16th of July.
Yeah, that was on Wellington's, old clapped out Wellington's they were.
Now, was this your first flight ever?
Yeah.
Well, and how was it? I mean, you'd wanted to do it.
There was about eight of us in the fuselage of the Wellington, and we all took turns of sitting in the rear turret, and a drogue being pulled by another Wellington, they'd fly alongside, or just in front of us, and we had to hit the and hit the drogue with machine guns.
And how did you do?
Not too bad, not too bad. What it was, the bullets had a coating of paint on them. And when the bullet hit the drogue, the paint came off and left the colour of the paint on the drogue, so they know who hit the drogue and who never.
And you did okay?
I done all right, yeah. We had a cine gun, cine cameras as well, in the turret, and they used to take a film of the fighters coming and attacking you. And of course, that was all for deflection.
Now, what was that like? Tell us about how that worked when you used it. So there'd be mock fighter attacks.
Yeah, they were Spitfires, and they used to come in at different angles, and you had to judge the angle of the Spitfire coming in. And the most important was when to open fire. If you open fire too quick, your bullets just dropped and missed. So you had to, on the camera, you had to make sure you got them within a range of about 200 yards. And you took the film, and when they come back, they still develop the film, and we all used to go in the on the screen, and everybody used to be waiting to see what each other done with the camera, and there'd be a few laughs as well. Yeah. And that went on for.
Were you a natural at deflection shooting?
I think I was, yeah.
Why were you so good at it? What?
I don't know why, but some were good, some were bad. But that's the secret of all gunnery. You must get your deflection right, because if you don't, you never shoot nothing down. Well, I didn't know what I was ending in for anyway. But
had you done any clay pigeon shooting?
Yeah, we done clay pigeon shooting.
Where did you do that?
We done that there. Yeah, I was quite good at that.
Now tell us about that, because that seems a funny thing to do, but I mean...
Yeah, that is for the deflection. That was a very good training, because what that done, when the clay pigeon went up, you fired in front of it. So when the pellets reached the area, the clay pigeon would be there at the same time. And that was it. I was very good at that. And we done about 4 or 5 hours of then clay pigeon shoot.
So now you were just going up and firing, 200 rounds, 100 rounds,
yeah.
You know.
That's right.
At drogues mainly.
That's right.
That or thing. And how were you taking to it, do you reckon? You were good.
Yeah, flying never affected me. A lot of them it affected. A lot of them got sick. Well, you can imagine up there, the smell of the. Because those Wellingtons, they're made of canvas. And the outside of the canvas, they used to dope it with paint, to stiffen the canvas up. And that smell of dope was in the aircraft, and a lot of them couldn't take it. It used to make them very, very sick. A lot of them got air sickness as well, but it never affected me, funny enough. I don't know why, but...
So you never felt air sick at all?
No. And no. There was only old crates. There was old Wellingtons, the real old vintage Wellingtons.
And any other training you were doing? You were going up on the flights, quite a lot, twice a day, basically.
Yeah.
Three times a day sometimes.
Yeah. That's all we done. That was it. They was pushing us through. Because I didn't realise, you'll see eventually why.
And but there's no other training on the ground?
No. We had a fixed machine gun firing. We had a rifle range, and they used to have a model of an aircraft going around in a circle. The same thing, deflection. You had to fire your machine guns to hit this model. But I used to find them put two barrels in front of the aircraft was sufficient. And that was the training. That's all we done.
Now, any incidents in the flight?
No, not really. I think we lost a few boys in... crashes.
Do you remember any of the crashes in particular?
No, not really, no. But I know we had a couple of crashes here. Lost a few boys.
But nothing. Now, you weren't there long, were you?
No. Six weeks, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, when you believe, now you're sitting, when you get onto it, you'll realise what a lucky bloke you're talking to, I'm telling you. You can't believe it.
So what happened towards the end of the course?
Well, the end of the course, we all stood on parade, and the CO come up, and he gave us all the air gunner's wing, and we was air gunner's wing and our sergeant stripes, and we were fully fledged airmen without much training.
So you were a sergeant at the age of 17, 16, 17?
Right. Yeah.
And what happened next?
Well, this I still tell people, we can tell in the logbook, still tell people then, but I had no more training. I should have done another 3 months at OTU, operational training. I should have done another 3 months on the conversion unit. But the shock was, I was posted straight from there, gunnery school, after a few hours flying, onto Lancaster's.
Now, so you were going to be a sergeant air gunner on a Lancaster with, now which squadron were you sent to?
Number 9 squadron.
And where were they based?
Waddington.
And what was your first reaction when you found you were going to be posted to them?
Well, I didn't know a lot. I didn't know what the score was. I didn't even know we had to go to OTU, to be honest with you. I didn't know what the score was. But we arrived at Waddington as 9 squad.
Wellington or Wallington?
Waddington.
Waddington, right.
Yeah. It's just outside Lincoln. I arrived at Waddington the same time as number 9 squadron had been flying Wellingtons, and they converted from Wellingtons. Well, they hadn't converted. They were sent to Waddington to fly Lancasters. That was in July 42.
It looks like, well, your first flight's in August.
Oh, August, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was there a couple of weeks beforehand.
Yeah, you'd been to the thing from till the 14th of August, yeah. So, now, what were your first impressions of 9 Squadron?
Well, I was overawed, to be honest with you. We walked into the mess, because being the first time I'd ever been in a mess, sergeant's mess to start with. And we must have looked very green. We had brand new stripes up, you know, we must have looked very green. Anyway, when I walked in, there was a atmosphere there. The reason for it was that 44 Squadron, that were flying Lancasters, they were stationed at Waddington, had lost the whole squadron on the attack on Allsburg. Remember the Allsburg raid? No, that was the first daylight raid that the Lancasters made in 42. And then and only one aircraft come back off that, and that was Nettleton. He got the VC.
And this squadron that had lost them was
44 Squadron.
So, what you saying there was an atmosphere in there?
Well, they'd lost all them aircraft, and there was a little bit down in the dumps. Because when we arrived, the whole squadron arrived at Waddington, and including me, we had no Lancasters, because they hadn't been delivered. So there was a whole squadron at Waddington with no aircraft. So we were waiting for delivery, because this was in the early stages of the Lancaster. It hadn't been going a couple of months. So we waited until we got our aircraft.
Now, what were your impressions of the Lancaster? What were your first impressions? What did you think of it?
Well, when I first saw it, I thought it was huge, you know. I couldn't believe that a thing that I could fly, because it looked big to me anyway. But apparently, especially when we'd just come off of Wellingtons, and we're sitting in the mess one day, and a flight engineer come up to me and he said, "Your name Galloway?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You're going to fly with me." He said, "I'm there new as well, being a flight engineer, because Wellington's never had a flight engineer." He said, "I'm going to be the flight engineer, and we're going to fly with a fella called Stubbs, Flight Lieutenant Stubbs." He was 21, and he was on his second tour of operations. Incredible. He was an very, very experienced pilot. Lucky enough, he took me on. Yes, please, Kit. Yeah. Oh, no, she wants a cup.
So what was his first name? Do you remember his first name?
We called him Dick. I suppose his name must have been Richard. Yes, him, Richard Stubbs, Flight Lieutenant.
And what was he like?
Well, he was a strange bloke, actually. He was a flight loo. He was a. He didn't mix with the crew at all. And we had another officer in the crew, and he said he never mixed with anybody. He never smoked. He never drank. He never went out with any girls or anything. He was just all he wanted to do was fly. But he was brilliant. He was a brilliant flyer.
So who else was in your crew? It was Richard Stubbs.
I've got a sharp picture of you.
No, they can't see it. No.
There was a Sergeant Chamberlain.
What was he like? And what was his job in the crew?
He was a navigator.
And what was he like, Chamberlain?
He was quite. I knew him. Actually, he went to a local school where I was in the East End. In fact, he's still alive, actually.
What was he like?
Nice bloke. Yeah, we got on well in the mess. Yeah. But he was up in the front of the aircraft there, and we didn't have a lot of communication with him during flying, but we did do afterwards in the mess. The engineer was.
Do you know his first name, Chamberlain?
Ken. King Chamberlain.
And who else?
There was a flight engineer.
What was his name?
Parrington.
Parrington?
Yeah. Parrington.
And do you know his first name?
Oh, no.
No, that's all right. And what was Parrington like?
He was a lunatic. He was a mad. Very good, very brilliant engineer he was. But he was a...
In what way was he mad?
Well, I don't know, he's not mad so much as that that don't care attitude, you know. He was very good. He was a very good engineer. You'll find out as you go along the reason why I say that. Then we had the wireless operator.
Remember his name?
Old Brown. His name was Brown.
What was he like?
He was all right, yeah. He was one of the chaps, yeah. Yeah, nice bloke, yeah. We was all friendly, apart from the skipper.
And who else?
The bomb aimer.
Remember his name?
Yeah, I've got his name. I've got him. I've got a picture of him there. I must have his name yet. Well, I'll find out for you.
Right, we'll just forget the rest of the crew for the minute, because yeah. you don't remember the names. What happened when you formed the crew? What was the process that went on?
Well, what went on was all not we weren't familiar with the Lancaster, none of us. So we was given a brand spanking new Lancaster to try out. So what we'd done a few. I think it's in the logbook there. We'd done a few bombing exercises and gunnery.
Now tell me about the Lancaster. What was the Lancaster like?
Well,
to fly.
It was a good plane to fly, but we had problems. For being a new aircraft, we had quite a few problems with the engines. That was fitted with what they call immersion pumps.
Hang on, tell us about the Lancaster. Before we look at the problems, yeah. You see what I mean, tell us yeah. about the Lancaster.
It was a good plane. It was solid.
What was good about it?
Well, you're talking about that day, it was fast, it was highly manoeuvrable, and it wasn't bad to fly. It wasn't too uncomfortable to fly in. And it had everything that, because they improved upon it greatly as it went on. But the first ones had problems with them, with the engines. The immersion pumps kept packing up on them, and that caused engines to fail on takeoff, engines to fail on landing. And we had a few crashes of them, I think.
What do you remember of that?
Well, we remember taking off a couple of times, and two engines had literally packed. If we'd have had a bomb load on us, we'd have never made it, you know. The engines just literally packed up because over the immersion. And this Parrington, he discussed it with the station engineer, and he decided to put gravity feed onto the from the petrol tanks onto the engines, and that solved the problem.
And you didn't have any trouble after that?
Oh, we did, but at the time it solved most of the problem anyway.
And what about your turrets? Can you describe the turrets and the controls?
They were Fraser Nash turrets. They were very, very good. But the thing was, there was nobody against the fighter. We had 303s.
We'll come to that now. Tell us how did they operate? What controls did you have? How did it fit together?
Well, it fit together. The controlling was done by oil pressure. From outside the turret, there was a reserve of oil with a small motor, and it was like hydraulic. That's what it's controlled by hydraulics. Your guns and the turrets were controlled by hydraulics. You press down on your two levers, you go pull on the left, pull on the right, up and down. It was all done by hydraulics.
And how do you fire?
You fire them through hydraulics. Pull the trigger, and
Where was the trigger?
The trigger was on your hands here.
Yeah.
As your hand was there, you had a trigger on the side like that. And there was a lot of problems with them. We had
what problems did you have with the turret?
We had armour plating on the rear turret. They used to, as you lifted the guns up, the armour plating was in front and that lifted up with you. But what that was causing is the weight of this armour plating was so heavy that it used to cause gun sinkage as you was firing the guns. So what they'd done, they took the armour plating out. That must have helped us. They took the armour plating out, and that stopped the gun sinkage. And the other problem was getting oil on the perspex of the turrets. So what they'd done, the oil was coming from the engines, from the slipstream. So what they'd done, they whipped the perspex out. So all the fronts of the where you was in front of the turret, they took all that out. It was bitterly cold. They took the perspex out because the oil was smearing up your sight.
Sure. Now, you seem to be doing circuits and bumps, cross country run, that sort of thing in your early flights in August.
Yeah.
But you don't do much of it.
No, not a lot. No, but don't forget, this was a very, very, very experienced crew. They'd already done, on their second tour, the pilot had already done about 15 trips. And on his second tour, in one instance. And the bomb aimer was an experienced flyer. And the others had already done 15 trips on one instance. So it was only a matter of converting from a twin engine onto a four engine. Which wasn't so hard really.
So although you were new, they weren't.
No, they was all experienced, which was to me was very. I tell you, I was so lucky.
Yeah. So you were in the sergeant's mess. They were all sergeants except for Flight Lieutenant Stubbs, I presume.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else before you come to your first operation? Your first operation seems to be in Dusseldorf.
That's it. Yeah.
That's on. 10th of September 42, so only a month after you got there.
That's right, yeah. Because all that time we were converting from flying twin engines onto four engines.
And you seem to have been on about six or seven flights.
Yeah.
And a bit of bombing practice as well.
We've probably done more flying, but a lot of it I didn't add into the logbook at the time. You know, it was pretty raw. And you'll see, basically speaking, we go right through the logbook. It's only just telling you where we went, because every month you had to take that logbook into the commander's office to be signed and certified that you'd done those trips. And if they see you wrote a lot of bits and pieces in it about the road, they used to call you a line shooter. So that's why we done it like that.